Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better
and better.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you in on a Monday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore, who is wearing a black shirt. TJ Henning, producing, engineering, contributing. Let's get fired up and ready to go. Welcome to the second week of May. What are we going to talk about? Lots to talk about. Husker Week kicked off with Coach Riley and Athletic Director Icor. Some comments to pass along from that luncheon today we'll share with you. Nebraska able to get commit number 10 for the 2018 class. Cameron Brown, standout wide receiver out of St. Louis. Just play along. If someone asks you to wear a St. Louis hat, it's in the name of recruiting. It's not going against either your Royals or your Cubs. We'll catch up with Mike Babcock in 15 minutes. HailVarsity.com and magazine. Babber's there to see the weekend sweep against Rutgers. So some Husker baseball. We'll talk some Nebraska football with Babber's as well. Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride. Mondays with Charlie. Coach McBride will join us in 1 hour. You can jump on if you like, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. You're always welcome to tap the line with Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. On Twitter, at Hail Varsity, at JMoore44, at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning. Did we win any money at the Derby this week? And let's get that out of the way. TJ, yes or no? Money?
No, didn't watch it
Nothing.
At all.
Okay, moving along. I watched it. I didn't win anything. Just knowing that I still can't pick horses. Bird, did you?
I watched. I'm always going to watch the three major ones, but yep. Wasn't very aware. I knew a few of the names. Obviously, Patch with the one-eyed horse, mm-hmm. That was kind of interesting to me, but wasn't tuned in as usual.
Sure.
But I was kind of crazy. I was coming home from Beatrice on Saturday afternoon and coming by the virtual horse track over there off of 77.
Yeah.
That place was packed solid. I mean, there were
my other friend named Jay Bird, he won $220 betting the right horse.
Really?
He made a pit stop there.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, should I stop? And I'm like, I looked over there. I mean, people were parking so far away. I'm like, oh my gosh.
My Uber driver Saturday just said that place was crazy. He dropped somebody off there and
it's a good spot to hang out. He'd probably make a lot of money picking people up out of there.
I think he could.
Maybe charge a little extra rate.
I think the rates are set depending on nighttime, but good idea. Well, Nebraska made a little money in the recruiting world this weekend with a verbal commitment from Cameron Brown. And let's start there. And Brown's commit number 10. He's a wide receiver from Christian Brothers College. And what sticks out to me about Brown, watching the film, but obviously not being able to reenact or even sniff that, I defer to Jay Moore on athletic ability and film. And listen, this is big because it's another position of need at wide receiver. Why is it important? Well, not only is Cameron Brown really talented, Cameron Brown's a wide receiver from the St. Louis area. And there's so many talented kids in St. Louis. There's so many talented kids at Christian Brothers. So that's the addition I do with this problem, this math problem here. And I think Cameron Brown's a guy that is extremely multiple because just watching his film, he'd line up on the outside and show off that 4-5 speed and beat you over the top. He'd catch it on a hitch. He could go over the middle. I mean, he could do a lot, and he did things pretty well yards after catch. He also showed off some blocking that, while it didn't remind you of Abdul Muhammad smoking somebody, it wasn't bad for, you know, a junior film when asked to open things up for his running back. Bird, Keith Williams just continues to do his work. This guy's a three-star, really kind of started blowing up after he did well at a Nike camp. And then, lo and behold, Sunday he tweets out, I'm committed to Nebraska. And then here comes Nick Saban and his $11.1 million. More importantly, here comes Alabama with, okay, this is an evaluation. Let's go get this dude. Mm-hmm. They all of a sudden offer him. Other places like Michigan and Ohio State and Texas and Oklahoma could offer him. I mean, Nebraska, again, in early on a kid. And the per the Rivals discussion with him, it was, listen, I'm shutting my stuff down. I'm good with Nebraska. But Nebraska's got other suitors, high-profile suitors after this guy.
No, a good player. I think you'll just, you know, people are probably thinking, okay, myself included, a lot of wide receivers, a lot of DBs. Well, I think that's going to be a wealth there. Well, you get your two best recruiters in Dante Williams and Keith mm-hmm. Williams there. So you're always going to be in the running for really good players. But more importantly, for thinking about it, is, I mean, like you said, the wealth of talent in that St. Louis area over these next few years is just, it's a lot. There is a ton of talent down there. You obviously, we got Trey Bryant from that same area last year, played a significant role in the mm-hmm. season. But I think you just keep building that pipeline down there. You got Kenny Wilhite on staff that's from that area. Mm-hmm. You got to farm that, and it's close. Is it in the 500-mile radius?
It's
outside. I don't have the exact mile.
It's been a long time since spring break, but driving diagonally through the wonderful state of Missouri.
Yeah, I've made that drive a few times.
It's 7 hours, isn't it?
Six.
Six?
Yeah, six, yeah. It's just, you know, it's three to Kansas City and another three to St. Louis. So you got to own that area. I mean, you got other great competition close with Missouri.
I don't know that Missouri is, I mean, with Pinkel gone, I don't know that Missouri, and they're still, they're not that far removed from playing in mm-hmm. SEC championship games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, correct.
To their credit, after their first year of, this is an awful honeymoon, they go 5-7, they won back-to-back 10-win seasons. Mm-hmm. They had back-to-back 10-win seasons. Now that Pinkel's done, you had the whole threat mm-hmm. of the boycott. I think there's a lot of kids in St. Louis, in other outlying areas, in the Kansas City area, that just, for, there was a period there about 10 years, and you played against them, and you saw them, where Missouri just cleaned up with guys that could get after the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Just cleaned up. Now it's not the case. I think everyone else has used the fact Missouri's been down. They're in a coaching change. And then you have Missouri's surrounded by a lot of pretty decent programs that want to make that jump. And I'm thinking they're not far from Tennessee. They're not far from Arkansas. And they're still kind of close enough. If Bama or Auburn want to roll in there, they can do it. On top of the fact, you have Ohio State that has the Ezekiel Elliott, their main get, mm-hmm. their prized recruit out of St. Louis mm-hmm. in the last 10 years, is playing for Dallas now after leading the Buckeyes to a national championship. So I think that area is open for business for everybody.
Oh, for sure. If you're a kid in Missouri, wouldn't you maybe say the best football program right now is the Division II powerhouse, Northwest Missouri State?
Probably.
But yeah, without a doubt, but
assuming they're paying attention Northwest Missouri State as a high four-star target.
Mm-hmm. Northwest is a D2 powerhouse, but that's kind of like apples and oranges mm-hmm. comparing those. But you got to win down there. We have to. I mean,
you'll agree it's markably harder now.
Well, without a doubt, but
you don't play them every year, you haven't been in and out. I mean, they've done well in the Kansas City region with kids.
Mm-hmm. But with a guy like Kenny Wilhite being down there, having that relationship with coaches and knowing people, kind of getting the
foot back in the door.
Yeah, and having the ins, kind of having the behind-the-scenes talk, who's coming up that people might not know of. Hey, this kid's only a sophomore.
Sure.
Be on the lookout. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, getting in early. That's a huge advantage. So you have to. I mean, because you look at it, Kansas City's had it. But around here, I mean, sure, you have some years that there's some talent close by, but I mean, this has been the talk now for the last year or two, how good St. Louis area is going to be. It's always been good, but now we're talking about, like, this is insane how good of talent is up and coming in the St. Louis region. And we finally have, I mean, it should be no excuses. You know, okay, yeah, California, Texas, the Floridas, the Southeast regions, but now you have somewhere legitimately where you can get in your car and drive and make it back in a day and not feel wiped. You know, you can make those drives. You can hop on a plane real quick, and it's a 35, 40-minute flight to go see someone, to make these moves. And we had to capitalize. And just with a guy like Trey Bryant, with this, it's just kind of getting that ball rolling. Everyone else is going to see, okay, my guys from St. Louis are going to, you know, are starting to do things. I want to be a part of that. You know, it's just, you know, continuing to get this ball rolling and grabbing as many people out of that area as we can.
There's kind of been a wait and see approach by some of the kids. What's the offense going to look like? I know what it's looked like the last couple of years, and this is a chance to see what it can be. I think Cameron Brown was up for his unofficial visit when Nebraska aired it out and went wide out crazy against Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
They threw it up, they threw it deep, and it was pretty sexy looking in the second half offensively with Riley and DPE doing some work. So Coach Williams has done a good job of explaining what Tanner Lee and future quarterbacks will do offensively, getting them involved. So you have other prospects in the state of Missouri, the St. Louis area that Nebraska is trying to get in on, and it all kind of, the flag was planted with Trey Bryant, same high school, Christian Brothers. You got McQuitty that'll be a freshman this year.
Mm-hmm. Forget about
and
it.
Then Cameron Babb is also a monster player. He's at the same high school as Cameron Brown, and he's a four-star dude. And I mean, both those guys are lined up. They're both split out wide each way. So I don't know where Babb's going to be, but they're close. And Cameron Brown's pretty tight with all these guys. Lineman Michael Thompson, he's going to be planning the visit to Lincoln. You have Mario Goodrich, who could be the other wideout that commits, because Nebraska likely has room for one more. And he was there for the spring game. And then you have Daniel Carson and Ronnie Perkins. They're defensive end recruits, highly touted, highly coveted. But you're getting, it's not just bringing a dude in to sweeten the pot. You're getting a need because you need more wideouts. Mm-hmm. He's evaluated. And here's the thing, too, that I look at this, and I'm not a stars guy. I will trust a coach's evaluation if he's a 2 or a 5 or whatever, okay? Coach Dubb thinks you're good enough to play Nebraska football. I'm all good. I know the guy's vertical jumps 40 inches. I know the guy's 40 time is 4.5. And I know he can play inside or outside and make catches in traffic or take it off the top or do the bubble screen and block. So he's got a lot of film there that you think can translate to Nebraska. All of that's great. But there's been a number of times the last couple of years where Nebraska has been in it and been in it till the end and lost out on a 5-star wide receiver. They've lost out on a 4-star wide receiver. Well, I don't want to say or call this settling, but I call it taking a look at a talent that you think can translate, and who cares if he's not 5-star or 4-star, he's a high 3-star, but Coach Williams feels super, super comfortable about getting a kid like this, no matter the stars. You're not settling, but you're getting and targeting who you want, and you're getting him in early versus, okay, this kid could come in and play for us. God, he's fast. He can make the catches. He can do a lot of things. He can also play defense. He had 4 interceptions last year as a corner/safety. But Nebraska feels good about who they got. They're moving on with 1, maybe 2 more spots available in the 18 class for wide receivers. So to me, that shows some growth to not maybe be too greedy mm-hmm. with trying for the giant orca type splash with this. With the star rating, and you're kind of settling here with a guy you know can come in and contribute and do well, on top of the fact with his relationships to other kids in the St. Louis region.
Yeah, and his ranking, he'll go up. I mean, he's making the he'll be making the world tour. He's going to go to every camp this summer, but he'll I'll be pretty sure that he's going to be a four-star going into his senior year. You know, whenever those reclassify, you know, the re-rankings from Rivals or 24/7, whatever the recruiting sites are, he'll make his way up to that four-star. There's definitely no doubt about it.
Yeah, and just looking at this Husker roster here, I believe he is the sixth Missouri guy we have on the team. You mentioned Javon McQuitty, Nealon Smith, the Davis twins, and Freedom.
Yeah, and Nealon's Neil's boy, which I was, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, yeah, that completely makes sense right now. And Nealon's a walk-on, wears number 48, I think. So it's kind of the rundown. That's what took me aback this weekend. Not that Nebraska got to commit, but they got to commit at this level this soon, and they're doing such a great job. There's no off weekend, and Nebraska will continue to recruit, and we'll keep you updated when that happens. Mike Babcock is coming up. We'll talk the importance of chemistry. No Walter White, not that type of chemistry, but guys in the locker room. Jay Bird will spend some time on that. Charlie McBride in less than 1 hour. Husker baseball doing awesome things. We'll spend a little time on football as well. Great to have you in on a Monday with Hail Varsity Radio Magazine and HailVarsity.com. 40 years and counting of Nebraska coverage. We'll talk to him, historian, author, and Hall of Famer, Mike Babcock at MD Babs. Up next, Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer Jay Moore, TJ Henning. We welcome in historian, author, and Hall of Famer. 39 years and counting, Nebraska football and Nebraska coverage. Mr. Mike Babcock with us. Babbers, what a weekend of baseball. How you doing?
Yeah. It was a good weekend for baseball, and the weather was nice. It was baseball weather. I got a nice sunburn out of the deal, and just it's all good, you know, for Husker fans to get that sweep the way it did. It's not easy to sweep teams, and certainly with the way Rutgers battled back there yesterday, I think Nebraska showed a lot of grit, or I guess the word Erstad uses is, you know, they grind. Hmm. And I think that probably characterizes his team and probably is why I was able to hold on and win that game yesterday.
Mike Babcock with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Babbers, that team that I look at, and we've talked to a few guys, as of you, just they're pretty locked in, lasered in. They're a lot like Coach Erstad, no nonsense, not a ton of small talk, but they're extremely focused. What's the vibe you get with this team as far as enjoyment? Do they enjoy the grind? They've showed that they can do it on Sundays. They showed that they've been able to do it against the other premier teams in the Big Ten when it comes to winning the series, but are they having fun with this ride?
Yeah, no, I think they're enjoying themselves. I think that Darren has to constantly remind them, pitch by pitch, you got to approach it that way because that's kind of the way college kids are. And last week was final exam, so I don't know if I would say a focus issue, but they had to be sure that they took care of business in the classroom and still had that. Once they're freed from that, as they were most of them early in the week, then they can focus on baseball. But Darren described it as, they were kind of in a daze, I think, coming out of final exams and getting that focus back. So I would guess that probably this week there's going to be a little bit more focus, which there needs to be because Michigan State will be a test. It's good that series is in Lincoln. Michigan State's got a couple of pretty good pitchers.
Yeah, Mike, that kind of brings me to an interesting scenario. So Nebraska's finally, they're in the Big top of the number one in the Big Ten right now in the conference. You got Michigan State this week. You got Penn State the following week. Both teams, I believe, their RPIs are in the 80s. Or I know they're 70 and above. A scenario of where Nebraska obviously could win both series, even sweep them potentially, and their RPI raises and goes up. And I'm not 100% sure where Nebraska's RPI is right now. I know they're ranked back in the top 25 as of today. But kind of a goofy scenario that Nebraska still play good baseball and lose and drop more spots into the RPI heading into postseason play.
You know, yeah, that's the thing. And back in the day, we're constantly talking about RPI kind of thing. But you know, Nebraska also has the Creighton game in there,
mm-hmm.
and basically you're trying to position yourself now for the Big Ten tournament because that's where it's going to be determined anyway. So it's to Nebraska's advantage that Michigan State is in Lincoln. Penn State's on the road. Penn State's won two conference games. Obviously, it's not going to help your RPI. But if you could finish strong, and I know they go pitch by pitch, but I look at it as there's the possibility here that Nebraska could win its last seven games. Okay, play well, win the last seven regular season games, go into the conference tournament as the number one seed because you're the regular season champion. And it's a positioning thing, I guess, is what I'm saying, because it's still going to come. You're going to have to play well in the Big Ten tournament to put yourself in the position that you want to be. So to some extent, I don't want to say the RPI doesn't matter, but it's not something you can control in the same way that you can control winning those games and doing well in the Big Ten tournament. That's the thing that Nebraska has to look at.
Babers, wanted to ask you about hosting a regional, and do you think Nebraska, if they win, I mean, this is a lot of ifs here, so just bear with me, but say they win out and then they win the Big Ten postseason tournament in Indiana, is that what it'll have to take to host for Nebraska, or is that still a lot to ask, getting a regional back at Haymarket?
Well, I think it's a long shot, obviously, and we're talking about Nebraska has five wins in a row now.
Mm-hmm.
If it wins out the regular season, that's 12 wins in a row. If you roll through the conference tournament, I mean, then you put together quite a streak.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you add in the factor that I think the NCAA does try to get some, not cold weather, obviously not cold weather when it's 89 degrees at Haymarket Park yesterday or whatever it was, but but you know, some of the northern the NCAA tries to get some northern host places, I believe. So if Nebraska had this again, and we're getting a little way ahead of ourselves here, but if Nebraska has this fantastic run at the end of the season, I think you could talk in terms of Nebraska and being able to play host to a regional. I think that's a real long shot and would require something remarkable like you're talking about, what you're talking about. But it's probably in the realm of possibility, again, if something really extraordinary happens down the stretch because of that. But the other factor is obviously you're going to draw well.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a nice payday for the NCAA in a situation like that. So those factor into it, but it still comes down to what Nebraska does down the stretch, and it's going to be a long shot.
Mike Babcock with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Babbers, want to flip over to football and wanted to get your reaction. We're a little bit tardy on this, but still would love to get your thoughts on Brian Ferentz's comments about Nebraska and he just kind of went around the Big Ten, around the in-state of Iowa with Iowa State, with Minnesota, and then that school west of Omaha is what he said. We had Jimmy Walden on Friday, and he kind of shook his head at it, couldn't believe that Brian said what he said, not because it was so vicious, but because he's Kirk's boy, and Kirk doesn't say two words to disrespect anybody. What did you think of what you read or heard?
Well, maybe that's why Kirk doesn't let his assistant coaches ever talk. I don't. Yeah. He's afraid of something like that's going to happen. Hey, you know, to be honest with you, I thought it was just an immature comment by a coach that somehow in his mind he thinks that's going to help Iowa's recruiting. I don't see where that really helps much of anything other than make him look fairly childish. And so I readily dismissed it. But in the context of what you just said, you know, I believe I'm right on this. I don't think Kirk Ferentz, I don't think he typically lets his assistants talk during the season or after games or whatever. And then to see something like this from son, it's like, you know, golly, this has got to be. I don't know. I was shocked by it, but I quickly dismissed it because there's no substance to it. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, what was he trying to accomplish other than to make himself look foolish?
That's where we're kind of at too. It's just like, all right, man, you're 34 and talking about programs and, you know, do better on the field if you don't want comments lobbed at your program too, is the other side of things. Babbers, what's coming up with the yearbook? What have you been working on? Excited for the 2017 yearbook of Hail Varsity coming out soon. Tell me what you've been doing.
Well, I've been working on, you know, some position breakdowns right now, and then I'm working on a feature story on a group of players that played in the mid '60s. A group of black players that referred to themselves as the Magnificent Eight, and a little bit about the racial climate at Nebraska in the mid '60s and where it had come to that point. It's really sort of fascinated me. It always has, and I was able to talk to a couple of the players that were. Really part of a depth chart where there were only eight black players on the entire depth chart in 1964 going into the fall of 64. So kind of a different approach to things, but something that's always interested me.
What was the sense, not to give too much away, about 90 seconds here, Babbers, but what was the sense of Coach Devaney, how he dealt with racial tensions of that era?
Well, I think the consensus from guys that I've talked to that would be in that position felt that Devaney was handled things fairly well.
Yeah.
Some of that was his background in Saginaw and his upbringing, you know, that he grew up with people of color and understood things in a way that maybe some didn't, but, you know, that having been said, still, as one of the players told me, at that time in the mid-60s, if you were at the university and you were black, people made the assumption that you were an athlete.
Gotcha.
And, you know, there's a lot of implications there that people might not understand, but it's a fairly significant observation, I thought.
Babbers, can't wait to read the feature in the yearbook. Mike Babcock, HailVarsity.com and magazine at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, we'll catch up soon. Thanks for taking a few minutes today.
Hey, great talking to you guys.
Awesome stuff. That'll be an awesome story. Michael just rock it as always. So thanks to him. Some Husker news and notes around the NFL when we come back as who's making impressions in camp, who's getting the invite back, who's been told thanks were good. That is on the way. Jay Moore is in studio today. 20 minutes from Mr. Blackshirt Charlie McBride. DJ Henning, Chris Schmidt, great to be with you on a Monday with Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You can find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Big thanks to Mike Babcock talking baseball and tremendous feature he is doing for the Hail Varsity yearbook. Sauter Heyman is your exclusive dealer in Nebraska for pure-grown diamonds. Let me tell you a minute about these pure-grown diamonds. They're 100% real. They're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth, and they have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds. That means they're pretty, and they sparkle, and they're flawless-looking. They're beautiful. And Mother's Day's this weekend. That's all I'm saying. A to B to C. They're also 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mined diamonds. They're eco-friendly, and they're one of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. That's a history of over 100 years. 100 years and counting. Sauter Heyman, your exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds in Nebraska. Go see Rick this week. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion, Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island, SauterHeyman.com. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Nebraska players trying to make the NFL jump. And we talked to Westy and Brandon Riley last week, Alonzo Moore as well. What we do know is Tommy Armstrong has been asked back by Minnesota, and that's after making the jump to the safety on Sunday. This from the Pioneer Press. So Tommy able to show that he's versatile. And safety could be a spot, played in a high school. We're working on getting TA on this week. So, Jay, your reaction. You've been a guy who's jumped from DN to outside linebacker. Speak to what had to happen as a non-contract guy, but a guy trying to get an invite back for more OTAs to go from quarterback and running back and wideout to safety and make an impression that way. That's nothing short of kind of a wow factor athletically to be able to do that.
No, without a doubt. It's not going to be easy. I mean, that's kind of showed you what the Vikings think of his, you know, his athleticism, his want to, his ability to, you know, get after it. I would imagine his ability to compete, really, that's what it comes to. You know, that was to his fault. I think that's what, you know, Tommy loved to compete, always wanted to make that great play, and that was almost a fault to him a little bit, just because there was such an easier play, but he wanted to show people, I can make this throw, I can do this, and it kind of cost him sometimes. But his ability to, you know, to move, and we were able to see what he's able to do in the pocket and running and scrambling. But it's going to be, that's such. A tall order to take on. I mean, listen, I don't know how much, if any, he played in high school. You know, usually when you're a quarterback, especially down in Texas, you know, it's just quarterback. You don't play both ways, as a lot of kids do play here. What I went through from doing defensive end outs, it was still a lot of the same. You're still verbiage. I mean, the same.
It's complete side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it's like me, you know, going to play in tight end, you know, that's kind of a similar switch, I'd guess. It's just, I mean, you're talking completely whatever thing you thought of. I mean, it is now kind of just thrown out the window. And only thing I could think that could benefit him is knowing how QBs think.
Sure.
Is knowing, okay, I know what I'm, as a quarterback, I was taught to look at the safety or read. That could be his, you know, his one up on those guys. Because I mean, if those guys that played safety, obviously they're being told what, you know, what they're looking for, but they've never actually played the position at the level he's played, and that might help him out a little bit. But man, that's a tall order to take on. I think if he can, you know, stick on, learn it, get invited back to training camp, that way he'll be able to stay up there through OTAs, train up there this rest of this summer, be with the coaches, you know, pick their brain, you know, annoy the hell out of them just to learn the system, learn the verbiage, learn the coverages and all that stuff. That's going to only benefit him, obviously, but it's difficult. There's no other way to put it. It's just super difficult.
Where could he make hay as a special teamer? Because he's been impressing them as a special teams guy too, and without getting into specifics? Are we talking Gunner?
I don't know. I was going to
Holder? I mean, I'm asking.
Potentially Holder, yes. Gunner, I don't think he has. I mean, Gunner, those are your
He's
guys.
He's got the speed, but.
Those are your dudes that can fly.
Okay.
I mean, you're putting corners. You're putting dudes that can absolutely pick them up and put them down. I wouldn't put Tommy in that necessarily that category, but I could see maybe as a PP on punt, okay, running down there making the calls, kind of a similar spot as kind of seeing everything, you know, overlooking everything as you would as a quarterback. You know, kick return being one of the frontline guys that's, you know, you're kind of maybe doubling with one guy, or you have a single block.
Okay.
Nothing. You're not setting the wedge by any means. You know, kickoff team running down there as a three or a four, trying to make a play. You know, it's just things like that. But he'll turn some heads, because I know he's got that fire in his belly a little bit. That he loves to prove people wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So
just look at
I'm
Twitter,
not right.
So you get his Twitter.
Right. I'm not gonna doubt him. I just know it's a long. It's just so hard, because all of a sudden, like I've said before, it's all of a sudden being thrown, being asked to drive a stick, you know, a manual transmission after you've driven an auto your whole life, but now you're being asked to do this for your first time in like the Indy 500.
Ah.
You know, it's hard. It's the speed of everything now is turned up an extra notch. You're thinking a lot more. It's not natural, obviously. So it's a crazy, but that's props to him, props to Minnesota to seeing those little things and to give him another chance at multiple positions.
Let's talk Westy for a second, and he made one mother of a catch in Tampa, but now he's off to Cleveland?
Yep, he's going to be with the Browns next week or this coming weekend.
Okay, so with Westerkamp, Cleveland, I mean, listen, I don't know a ton of their wideouts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, aside from Gordon. And that's not popular news usually.
Yeah, Terrell Pryor.
And yeah. Mm-hmm. So
Corey Coleman.
Coleman, thank you. So I look at those guys, and you look at Westy, and I look at Westy, not that he couldn't have enhanced what Tampa has. I just look at what they have as starters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's a gutsy place to pick to go try and make a squad, right, just because of what they have and what they've drafted. And
Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson.
Yes.
The kid out of Clemson that plays that slot position, kind of a similar build and player as
then
a Westie.
And they just got O.J. at tight end from Bama.
Right.
So now Cleveland, though, I mean, with you, man, post-San Francisco, and we can get into this a little further here next segment, but when it came to taking a phone call or making a phone call, did you want to jump up to a team that had a chance to win, or did you want to find a place where you could get a job?
You just took whatever you could get. I mean, I think I explained, you know, I went and worked out for the Patriots a week or two after I was cut from 49ers, and then they were going to wait a week to sign me. But then literally going back to the airport, my agent calls and says, hey, don't get on that flight to Lincoln. You're getting on a flight to St. Louis. The Rams are signing you.
Okay.
And you just take it. I mean, I could have said, no, I won't wait for New England, but you don't know if that's going to happen.
Okay.
So you take what you can get.
More from Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt, TJ Heading. We'll wind down hour one on Hail Varsity.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text Hail to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at Schmidt_radio and JMoore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
10 minutes and it'll be Mondays with Charlie. Coach Blackshirt McBride will be with us. Jay Moore, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mike Babcock with us this hour. Some other thoughts from Coach Riley as he was in Lincoln today. The Nebraska tour starts this week. They'll be in Grand Island tomorrow, I believe.
I might meet them out there then.
Yeah?
Driving out west tomorrow.
Are you? They're
going
to
go to Kearney.
The Grand Island High School. Central Catholic's honoring Coach Perella tomorrow.
Nice.
So we'll ask Coach McBride about Mr. Perella. And I wanted to ask you here real quick. Riley was asked about Alex Davis and about a foot injury. And according to Riley, they think Davis will be okay. The outlook's better. And when you hear foot injury, you're just like, dear God, is it a stress fracture? Is it the Lisfranc? Is it what can it be? Riley's quoted here in the Journal Stars. It worried everybody for a bit. So I wanted to ask you, though, say Alex Davis isn't the guy or Cedric King isn't the guy. What? There's 1,000 people they've got at linebacker. What do you do for that spot? Because you feel good about Newby and Gifford.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the hybrid spot outside that needs to be able to stop the run. But you got to be that that speed demon, too, though, off the edge. And,
yeah.
And rush, right?
No, without a doubt. Yeah, it gets a little sticky. It gets a little fuzzy there. Initially you don't go Alex Davis, and then you say, yeah, Cedric King. Then after Cedric King,
I mean, I think they have people to choose from.
Right,
who is it?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, I'm not looking at the roster. I can't, I mean, thinking off the top of my head, because I'm thinking, okay, I got Gifford, I got Newby.
Can you move one of those two?
Potentially. I mean, maybe Gifford, maybe.
Yeah, Tyron maybe Ferguson, Newby. That's
yeah,
a safety
yeah.
that's...
You can make it work. I mean, you definitely can. But again, you want those guys who had been playing defensive end, who had been putting their hands in the dirt, to be over there to that call side stand-up guy who is going to set the edge against the run, who's going to rush the passer, you know, because, you know, Newby, Gifford, those are going to be your guys who are probably dropping into coverage more often than not.
Newby's got a better experience as a pass rusher.
Correct.
I'll say that.
Correct. So initially, probably if that would happen, I would probably put Newby over to that guy. I just think he has a little more thump on that edge and has the ability to come off the edge. I mean, we interviewed, you know, Gifford a couple weeks ago, and he said, yeah, that was rushing the passer was a whole new experience for him. So I think initially that would probably be the way I would go. Again, I'm not familiar enough with the roster, and again, with all the changes being made to positions and who's playing what, just off the top of my head, to say, yeah, it's going to be him. It's going to be A. But you probably have to look at moving Newby over there. Because there's always something to be said being comfortable playing in a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you cannot duplicate. You know,
but not only that, but you have both those guys that have performed really well.
Mm-hmm.
Have them on the field at the same time is what my thinking was. And then you're two inside guys and Young and Weber. So, but you want Alex Davis to keep learning, keep getting better, and obviously get that foot healed up. Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride up next, hour two. On the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day, we get better and better. We get better.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Back with you, hour two, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore, and TJ Heading. It's that time. Mondays with Charlie, Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride. No one likes to be distracted during the game. If you find yourself preoccupied by financial concerns, Emeritus will help you find focus, and it'll help protect your loved ones with disability insurance, life insurance, and investment planning, also protecting your employees with retirement, dental, vision, and hearing plans. 130 years of giving you peace of mind and keeping promises. Emeritus, proud to stand by and support Husker Athletics, proud to bring you Coach Charlie McBride. Coach, how are we doing this week?
Well, I'm sitting here, the sun's out, beautiful, and the wind's blowing like heck, and it's cold.
Ah. So it's picturesque, except for the temperature.
That's right. It's a beautiful day. Don't go outside.
I like it. Well, Coach Riley and I coached in the in-state tour commences today, and Coach Riley had a chance to say a few words before they head out to kind of tour and cover the state. Coach, did you guys ever do anything like that? I mean, you did. It was called recruiting, but I'm talking about just some handshaking and saying hello to not only Lincoln and Omaha, but other parts of the state.
Yeah, we did. We did. We actually had it divided. I think I don't know how exactly, but we had some, like football went to certain places, for example, and baseball went to certain places, and some everybody went together at certain places, and you know, because you never can cover it all. I don't care how you do it, you know. And so I think we tried to hit everything we could, including small towns and stuff like that. But once you stop at night, then you have some kind of a gathering spot, you know. So, you know, try to keep from somebody, try to keep from not missing somebody, which is, you know, almost impossible. But we did it toward the end. At the beginning, I don't remember doing it. Coach Devaney may have done it with Tom or something like that, but as it got on, it got with all the sports.
Coach, the early signing period just finally got approved, and that was kind of a nice, you know, decision for the favorite for Nebraska. They do, you know, a lot of times go and do the early work, get some guys off the radar. And then all of a sudden, you know, some other schools might come in late and poach them. But your thoughts on the early signing period? You know, the December 20th now that kids can finally sign that NLI. Any concerns with that? Possibly because coaching changes come after that. Well, and would you have been in favor of something like that back in your time?
I think at this time, back then, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I think with all the decommitments at the last minute and all this kind of stuff, if somebody's gonna, you know, there's gonna be kids that won't sign. I mean, it's some will sign, some won't sign, and it'll be, you know, a matter of babysitting one side that signs and the other side, you know, just, you know, it's gonna have to go to the end. And that's what a lot of the big timers will do, because they like that recruiting stuff. So but, you know, I think it's not a bad idea. If you get some of the players that really committed to flat, just say, hey, you know, I'm coming and that's it. I don't need to wait till, you know, February 6th or whatever they call it. So I think it might work out. We're all going to find out pretty quick as after it all gets in. Next year, when recruiting is over, what the coaches come up with and what are the pros and cons about it and see if it worked.
Charlie McBride with us, Mondays with Charlie, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, that early signing period is going to be nice. It'll also allow the bump up, the move up of paid for official visits, not only for the kids pre-senior year, but also their parents. And that's super monumental with Nebraska, and you look at the academic support that Nebraska has that's pretty much second to none on top of the, you know, the football that Nebraska can play. When you look at Ed Riley and his staff and what they're doing, Coach, from a recruiting standpoint, what do you think is separating them from some other staffs, from some other blue blood programs that are also pretty prominent out there? Why is it working so well for Riley and company?
Well, I think one of the things is, you know, I think a lot of the kids that came here, you know, really are impressed with the fans and the, you know, the surroundings, the facilities, you know, the academic part of it, you can't pass. I mean, there's probably not another academic department in the country that spends as much money or time with the individuals. Yeah, you know, I'm sure there's some that will argue that, but you know, I think that's, you know, when you're looking at a school, you want to be sure yourself. I know the parents, you know, really, really gravitate to that type of thing, but the player has to gravitate to it. And so a lot of times you're getting somebody in here who says, oh, I don't want to be watched that much. I don't want to be, you know, yes, I don't need this, and I don't, you know, they're little more independent, but I think that plus I think the system, I think that you know, that they run here, I think a lot of kids are kind of impressed with a, you know, change of defense, you know, I think the spring game helped people see a little bit of something, but it really didn't show all the things they do on defense, maybe a few, and that's what everybody does. I mean, they're all doing the same thing. I mean, it's you know, they're not coming up with the stuff, especially when you have a new coach on the staff and want to know what he's doing defensively. It's pretty tough not to have much film of them. Of course, they'll use Connecticut film and so on and so forth. But, you know, it's I think Coach Riley himself is the kind of person kids gravitate to. I think his attitude and his, you know, and I go back and say he's a lot like Coach Osborne. He's not, you know, he's in control of himself all the time. He's very positive in everything he says, and he's, you know, the kind of guy that speaks well with both parents and recruits. And then I think they got a good staff. Mm-hmm. And those are all the things I think that happen. I think a lot of times the assistant coach has a lot to do with it. You know, that they know, they don't know that they're going to be there the whole time, but they do know that they, you know, gravitated to this guy, and he's you know, paid attention to me, and I feel like comfortable going where he is.
Coach, getting back to some more changes that have been going on in college football, and it's one that was probably well on its way to being done, and that is there is no more 2 days in college football. I know they've tweaked it to where if you had one, you didn't have, you know, a 2 day, you just had one practice the next day, but that is no more. There is no more 2 days left in football. It kind of makes me upset because I was still had to go through those, and I think it's the natural right that I think every football player should go through before the season, but that's no more. And do you agree? Well, do you think that's needed, or would you still like to do you see it, you know, being part of the game?
If they're going to cut it down, I don't think they ought to cut it all the way down to 2 days. How many practices? I don't know the number. Do they get before they play their first game? Is there a number out?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think it's
29.
Yeah. Is it 20s? Like 20? Yeah, 25? I can't remember exactly.
Well, what did we have, 28 before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Does that mean they bring them in earlier?
Correct.
They will.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. You know, you wonder sometimes, you know, the coaches are out now. They were out recruiting the last month. They come back, if they can get some time, and I don't know what they get, but, you know, you have to get ready for next season. You have to evaluate your players. You have to talk to your players before they leave. And I'm sure Coach Riley wants to talk to just about every one of them personally. And so that takes up a ton of time. And now you have to get ready for the season. And by the time that they move the date up, good luck at having a vacation. You know, I mean, it's turned into the NFL, and to me, the price is right. You know, they're going to keep these guys from just being able to relax at some point. You know, that's you know, you've got to. I always believe this. You got to get away from it. You know, you got to spend a week or two away from the game. Just go. Do your thing and forget about football, and try to rejuvenate yourself. It's something that happens with coaches, players, you know, everything. I think they need a little time off just to, you know, to rejuvenate about the game. Now, we had kids that wouldn't miss a day in the weight room, but that was part of their relaxation in some ways. So. You know, a lot of them will stay and work all summer, and to them, that'll be fun. You know, a lot of guys really enjoy doing that, and the guys that are great players do that.
Coach, wanted to get your reaction here. Coach John Perella being honored tomorrow by Grand Island Central Catholic, and going to be a Hall of Famer for him. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I'm sure he deserves it. I'll promise you that. That's for sure. You know, and you know, it's hard to say. A lot of schools don't even have that kind of thing to, you know, to recognize their past players and things like that. But John's earned every bit of it. And now that he's been at the three levels, you know, and there's a chance, and when he gets a little older, maybe he's going to the next level. You never know. He's got a lot of friends at that level, but I would say this that. He's probably doing pretty good where he is, and I think that his wife, family is there, and it's their home. And you know, John may be there until his hair gets really gray. but his blood will be red, I'll promise. You know, and I think that's just a great tribute to him. You know, I just feel bad that his, you know, family, just his mom and dad, of course, are gone. And they, and but it'll be, you know, for John and his wife, it'll be a great thing to, you know, to do. I mean, it's get back with people you probably haven't seen in quite a while. And that's really, that's kind of, you know, my high school, they didn't, I don't think they knew who even went there, you know.
Right.
But the like, for example, 1 year, for years, the football team was the team in the state. And then the next 2 years, last year, they won the state basketball championship and stuff like that. So there is a good athletic program that it, that has maintained itself there. And when I was at school, 80% of our class went to college.
Wow.
And so, yeah, and it, and you know, and it was always high that way. I mean, a lot of kids from that area got to go, went to school, and that's you know, that was something that was reported regularly, you know, each year. Whether it's local, but I know a couple times it was in the, you know, in the big papers, in the Tribune and the Southtown and all these different papers.
Charlie McBride with us, Hail Varsity Radio. His number's being retired. That's exactly the, I just got the flyer pulled up, but it's good for him, and he'll be doing the Athletic Booster Club banquet for Grand Island Central Catholic tomorrow at 6. So that is awesome. Coach, if it warms up, be sure to venture outside, but we'll be sure and catch up with you next week and talk some more football, if that's all right.
Well, I'm here alone, and my wife, you won't believe this, but has gone to a meeting of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Really?
Yeah. Boy, there's got to be some old cranky ones there.
No doubt.
You said, I'm
that's
good.
For sure.
I'll drop you off. Okay. I like that one. Coach, stay out of trouble, all right?
Well, go get your golf clubs warmed up. I know you guys can't wait. So
I know.
It's coming soon. It's coming soon.
We'll get it done. Coach, we'll talk soon. Thanks again.
Okay, thanks for having me.
There he is.
Talk to you next week.
There he is, Mr. Blackshirt, Charlie McBride, Mondays with Charlie.
Sounds good.
He's dropping.
Old cranky ones.
Some old cranky ones. We'll, we ran out of time. We'll have to get him to expand on
I can't
chemistry.
Believe there's no more 2-a-days. Well, NFL's taken away from that. That was a negotiation though for the CBA,
right? But knowing how murderous 2-a-days were,
man. I mean, I was my true freshman year at Nebraska. I was the last. That was the last year where they allowed 2-a-days every day, so we'd go 2-a-days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, have a scrimmage on Saturday, get Sunday off, and you did that again for another week.
Did you love it, though? That seems kind of up your alley.
Absolutely not. It was awful. It was horrible. That was a grind. That was an absolute grind.
Yeah, that sounds... Whew.
That was a grind.
Man.
I think your first 2 days were no pads, I don't think. But, yeah, it was... Dude, it was brutal. There was a time...
And you didn't get you didn't get your... exactation of revenge. Did
no,
you?
Well, because the next year they instituted the rule that it's been in play for what, 14 years now. Yeah, that's my math right there. 2003 to 17. You know, you had a 2-a-day. The next day you had a 1-a-day. Then it was a 2-a-day. And you only had 5. Yeah.
We'll dive into that. We'll get into the topic of chemistry. Hail Varsity continues.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Big thanks to Blackshirt Charlie, Coach McBride, Mondays with Charlie with this last segment. Every Monday at 5:06 with Hail Varsity Radio. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker, NFLer Jay Moore. TJ Henning, a lot to get to. We'll get into some chemistry talk and the early signing period that you touched on with Coach McBride. December 20th, is that right?
I believe so.
So you had a 3-day window, 72 hours, and you can go ahead and knock it out early. Coach Riley, in discussions with the media today, part of his Nebraska tour that kicked off at the executive club, and the executive midget football team always smoked us, so that's a sore spot, thinks that that was an appeasement move for now, but it could eventually shift to July 1st. Mm-hmm. And I am torn. I'm not necessarily worried for Nebraska, but there's other programs there that it is going to be a keep up with the Joneses type thing where you're going to hopefully and have to get your bumper crop in that early signing period. And if you have to wait for two or three guys or a position, then you wait. Mm-hmm. But for Nebraska, I'm not completely worried about their evaluation ability. I think they evaluate well. They're early in on kids. They're first a lot of times at some of the skill spots, and they've done a pretty good job so far mm-hmm. in locking guys up to signing day. And there's always a kid or two or three in Nebraska's recruiting class that just blows up. And Alabama, or pick a school that's pretty high profile, comes in late.
Yep.
So I think Nebraska will just be fine with evaluation, and it's getting that translation from high school to college level, and then to play and contribute by your redshirt freshman or even redshirt sophomore year at a high level. So I think Nebraska will be okay with the evaluation side of things, but, man, it forces you to be really right all the time, and it's in a industry and business and a projection that your 50% is still an awesome average.
Right. Well, it's just there's a lot of interesting things. People, you know, does it benefit Nebraska? A little bit, but it doesn't really change a whole lot, in my opinion, because like Coach said, some guys are just can still wait till, you know, a month and a half, you know, till February, with that first week in February, whenever it is, to sign. They'll wait till last minute. They want to be courted, you know. They want to be
Does that bother you?
A little bit.
Is it I want the attention, or I'm really?
Oh, without a doubt, people love.
Or I'm really trying to figure
I think there are some. I do believe there is some kids out there that are trying to make the best decision, and they're torn. I mean, they love the coach that's recruited them at the three schools that he likes, and you know, it's Alabama, it's Ohio State, and it's Nebraska. Mm-hmm. You know, three blue blood schools is great. You know, he likes Dante Williams. He likes Urban Meyer. He likes Nick Saban, whoever it may be. You know, he likes those. He loves them. But he's really torn. He really wants to make the best decision. I truly believe there's kids out there. But I also believe that kids love the attention. They love to put out certain tweets so that they get a few more followers on Twitter. They like to just push those necessary buttons just so that they can maybe get another interview,
the manipulation.
No, absolutely. And they love, you know, and you know what? It's just how the recruiting game goes now, that you have to play that game. You, not saying the kid, I'm saying everyone else. I'm saying the rivals, you have to entertain them because of what it's become. And I think there's definitely a lot more of those kids than the kids that are truly trying to make the right decision. I think they wholeheartedly know where they want to go, but there's like, hey, let's enjoy this. Let's go take all my five official visits. Let's get all the attention. Let's go, you know, whatever it may be. Hey, you know what? I guess you're in the position. Soak it up. Eat it up. I never was in that. I went on one official visit. I visited unofficially to Iowa State because it was you could drive there, and just wanted to go see what they're all about. But that was never in my intention. As soon as Nebraska offered, I committed the next day, and that was done. That was the end of it.
Talk at all about the redshirt? Not the redshirt, but the walk-on versus scholarship.
Mm-mm. No. Like whether I was going to get
whether they. Were you a guy they slow played, they being Nebraska?
No, I mean, I got offered the summer before my senior year.
Okay.
Like, like June.
Okay.
So no, I mean it was, and I had at that point I've had an offer from Iowa and Iowa State.
Okay.
You know, fall offers. Iowa was the first school to offer me.
So Ference is the first
head
offer.
Yeah,
okay.
And then and McCartney was the next. So those are all within, and I just kind of went to Iowa State just because out of respect to them for offering me a scholarship, and then once. You know, Nebraska offered me, you know, a couple months later. Those offers came in like March and April.
Okay.
So, no, that was never the discussion. But once that was done, once they offered, it was done deal. That's funny. I was at home this past weekend. Not this, the one it was, the weather was really awful.
Yeah.
That last week in April, my mom's like found all the boxes of my recruiting letters. There's like two huge filing boxes of recruit. It was kind of cool to go through them.
You went Bosworth and went through the whole storage file?
I kind of just, you know, rummaged through them and just, you know, majority of them all from Nebraska. We've just seen other schools that were, you know, it's like you kind of forget that, oh, wow, you know, Clemson and all the stuff from Penn State and Wisconsin and, you know, never got any offered, you know, Florida, you know, all these handwritten letters, you know, from you know, pretty big time coaches. It's just kind of fun to go back and look at it and just reminisce, you know.
Well, we're going to live vicariously through you, Jay.
I need to go through them all. I'd just like to go through them and just kind of see. Because I think there was a handwritten one for Paterno in there somewhere.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. You know, Penn State was big. They sent me a lot of stuff. But, you know, it's crazy to get about one or two letters a week once I committed from Nebraska.
So one possible downside, though, to this early signing period, Bruce Feldman, who writes for Fox Sports, he brought up the some head coaching changes do happen after December 20th. So this probably will trigger a lot of national of letter of intent appeals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That was the major. I mean, that's going to be a definite issue. You know, a team that goes 6-6, plays in a bowl game, loses, and their coach gets canned, and they have 12 kids have already signed, and they, you know, you play in one of those lower tier January 4th games, you know, down in Mobile, Alabama, or St. Petersburg, Florida, whatever it may be, Papa John's Bowl, whatever they're called now. So that's without a doubt could potentially, but I don't think it's going to change much because those kids that you sign, they're signed early, they're in, they're committed. Yeah, you still might have to massage them a little bit, you know, and you're obviously going to pay attention. But now your focus turns, okay, those kids that haven't signed, that are still maybe on the fence, but they're still committed to us. Now you got to, you know, then you can kind of take everyone and just throw your absolute most attention to them and just say, okay, we got to keep these kids here. What can we do? And I don't know how this affects. I'm not all in on the recruiting rules, you know, the no contact rules whenever those kick in at a certain point in January.
That applies to only certain programs.
Correct. There's definitely ways around.
What do you mean?
Right.
No contact.
No, but I think it's good. I'm just glad that they're finally tweaking things. I mean, it's about time that they're making the necessary moves and making the necessary changes to better everything. I mean, because other sports have had it.
I've got a hypothetical, though. How many really good kids are going to fall through the cracks because they're senior film guys? You are good enough to be a junior film guy. The quarterback evaluation begins when they're a freshman and then into their sophomore year, and you want to get your quarterback if you take him as a junior or even a junior to be. So some of these kids are true prodigies when you look at your top 10 pro-style quarterbacks that the Georgia's going after, that LSU wants, that Florida State gets, that Nebraska's in on, that SC wants. If you miss on that, though, that's my thing. And your glaring example of being too good for your own good was Texas, post-Vince Young. He still had 4 years of Colt, but they had their classes done. And they were 2 years ahead of time. And it was, we're Texas, you're coming to us, we pick. We don't recruit, we pick. What happened? You want to talk massive whiffs, not necessarily in some talent, but in some guys that had any fire in their tummy. You had a soft program born out of a championship program that couldn't beat Oklahoma, finally beat Oklahoma, couldn't win the big bowl game, finally won the big bowl game. And you got that X-factor difference maker at quarterback, and they had a seven-year run at quarterback, and they had a seven-year run. It's a pretty good defensive lineman. They had it put together because they've been climbing, and they hit it, and then it just went to hell because The guys they brought in didn't have the edge. They were soft. And the coaching and staff also became soft. And then it was too late, and everyone gets blown out. Mm-hmm. And you're on your third coach now, not even 10 years, just about 10 years removed from a national championship, which is, you want to talk about Rome being burnt down in 3 days, that's what happened. And I know some of you are not shedding a tear about that, but Texas is the cautionary tale with the sped up nature of recruiting. Mm-hmm. And this is a program that could go pick and find talent and players in their backyard. And I don't think if you talk to coaches or players from back in that era, and I'm talking probably post 09, that's not that long ago. That's when they dropped off the face of the map, face of the earth, I should say. Texas, after Alabama, smoked them in the mm-hmm. bowl game. Mm-hmm. They have not been the same since. They're trying to work back to it. And what type of kid are they recruiting? Well, they were recruiting top three classes, talent-wise, and they've not put anybody in the NFL. They've not won the Big 12. Even years that they've beaten Oklahoma and Baylor in the same year, they're still getting stomped or losing to Iowa State or something. So that's what I'm nervous of, the keeping up with the Joneses and the wrong evaluation. And you have a couple of years of that accumulation. You have a couple of years of just wrong chemistry or wrong people, or you miss on a quarterback like they did, or you don't get any fellas to play on the defensive or offensive line. All of a sudden, you're Texas with the air quote best talent in America and a top three recruiting class, and you're doing nothing with it. All because you had to get, you were able to get your classes complete in record time, and you missed and whiffed on the evaluation.
That's a good point. Very good point.
That's a constant battle. It's something to be worried about, but you have these new rules now to your advantage to get kids up here on your dime early. We'll continue on. Hail Varsity.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Chris Schmidt, Jay Moore. TJ Henning will dive into the issue of chemistry. First, I want to remind you about safety belts and why they're important. If you're ejected from your vehicle because you didn't have your seatbelt on during a wreck, you're not the only one who suffers. Family, friends, coworkers suffer. If you're injured or killed in a crash, click it or ticket, reduce injuries, save lives. You do it every day. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. So Coach Riley today mentioned that Tanner Lee kind of really, and I'm paraphrasing, but one of the guys. And Bird, wanted to get your thoughts here on chemistry, and we kind of touched a little bit on it with Vogel when we talked to him about his upcoming book with John Cook and how how huge chemistry is for Coach Cook when it comes to recruiting and putting a team together. Everyone talks about team chemistry's got to be great, and I totally buy that. And Sam McEwen did his rewind out of the World Herald, and chemistry was touched on quite a bit. And I want to go dive into this for a little bit here with, is it something that can be molded versus, or I mean, obviously, yeah, you want organic chemistry. You want to sit down and do a show and get to know a dude and it, you hit it off. Okay. And I'm talking about us three. That's worked. Okay. It's organic. I mean, you laughed when I put a gun to your temple and he's like, you're not scaring me. I'm joking. But you want it to be organic.
Right.
And then there's just the necessity of, all right, this is the face of the program. This is your new quarterback. This is your new offense. This is the style. Do the wideouts love the guy, or do they just like he can throw a spiral and read a defense? I mean, let's just get down to it. How big a deal is it, and how big a asset was a guy like Zach Taylor from a chemistry standpoint? You lived with him. He was your roommate. That was off the field with buddies. On the field, you saw how the offense was more in tune. to help win some football games and get to a conference title game.
Yeah, it's always interesting. It's, you know, because you talk about chemistry with...
You're not going to love everybody, but can you get along
it's
and
different.
Play
you
for
talk
guys.
About a volleyball team. It's very important because you're dealing with, you know, 12 girls. Or, and same with basketball. You're dealing with 12 guys, you know. It's just the cult. I mean, in the interaction is so much closer, you know. It's just in. It's just different. I mean,
it's more intimate.
But, yeah, correct. But then it's like, okay, what's the difference between culture and chemistry? You know, I think if you have a great culture within your program, chemistry is going to come natural. Because I think a lot of times with football, I think in football teams where it really comes down to, and necessarily with volleyball and basketball teams and baseball teams, but respect has a lot to do with it. Respecting your teammates, respecting your coaches, respecting, you know, yourself, because if you respect, you know, you want to be respected as a player, so and by your peers, so you work hard, you take coaching, you help out your teammates. I think those all turn into great chemistry, great culture. You practice the right way, you take care of your teammates. If you have something wrong with something, you go ahead and address it. You don't talk about it behind people's backs. You commit to something, you commit. You don't leave your team out to, you know, your teammates out to dry. You don't throw anyone underneath the bus. To me, that's respect kind of starts there. That's the culture that you have, and then that turns into really good chemistry.
And that kind of starts with the peers not allowing things to slide. There's oversight and enforcement by the coaching staff.
Correct. There's a standard. There always has to be a standard, whether it's, you know, if it's 10 minutes early is on time, then that's the standard. If it's five minutes,
that's a little thing,
right.
But it's...
But that's a huge thing. It's, you know, making sure, you know, you're going to have a, you know, you're going to every class. You're never allowed to miss a workout. If you do, you better have a damn good excuse. You're making all your times on your runs. If you're not, you know, hey, you're getting yelled at. What's going on? Why, you know, you gotta be doing the necessary things. And I think the greatest thing too is for when it comes in the culture and the respect, the accountability is understanding that people might be getting after you or hard on you, but because they want the best for you. Because I think some kids and players, they immediately think, oh, this so and so hates me. He doesn't like me, you know. And that puts kids in a – then that all of a sudden messes with your chemistry because he thinks, oh, he hates me, he doesn't like me. No, the guy probably loves you. The coach probably loves you. He just wants the best out of you, you know. Understand that. And that can be a very tricky for some kids depending on how they're brought up. You know, some guys – and you saw this – you kind of see this more with football just because it's such a bigger – spectrum of 100 to 120 guys instead of 12 to 15 to 20, whatever it may be on different types of sports, is some guys you have to know how to coach them. I think that's you or how you can – some guys – you couldn't yell at some kids because they would just go into a shell and they would just shut off.
Does that just blow you away? Is violent and is territorial and high intensity and just barbaric – football is and how physical it's supposed to be. Does that blow you away that some kids can't get yelled at? You would think if you're out smashing your head together with each other.
I don't know. I just
that's just how I always envision football, where you did it wrong, you're going to hear about it, you're going to be.
But I think it's just
screamed at.
It depends on how you're brought up. I mean, we did something wrong. My dad was, you know, it was. You got that voice. You got that look. You got you're in deep crap. Like, and you're gonna be, you know, let you knew it 100% that you messed up, and it wasn't put nicely. It was an ass chewing. There's no other way to put it. It was an ass chewing.
Those aren't discussions.
Exactly. It's a one way discussion. You just listen. You take it, and you better make sure it doesn't happen again. So I mean, but some parents aren't like that. You know, it's
your dad and my dad must have known each other.
Yeah. So I admit, but. But you have to. But no matter if it's football, baseball, volleyball, but you know how you have to handle them. I think every coach says that. You know, Charlie said it. You know, when you have to, you know, hug them and when to get after them. You have to know there's certain times, and you can't just, you know. I think as a coach, you just can't rip into them every single time. Sometimes you have to pull them over. And
it'll lose the effect, too.
Correct, exactly. It wears off. It's, you know, it's just, yeah, exactly. But there's so much. There's so much into it. I mean, I just think, like I said, with good chemistry, you have to have good culture. You have to have respect. And it starts, like I said, it starts with respecting yourself and respect to – in wanting to look, you know, be in good graces and with your other peers, with your teammates. I want to be known as a good teammate. I want to be known as a guy that works hard. I want to be known as a guy you can count on that doesn't mess up, that's on time, that's has accountability. That all starts – I think if that – And that's, again, that goes to that culture. If you have that as a culture and everyone has that, everything else kind of takes care of itself.
So it's so easy to say rather than do.
Correct.
As far as getting that right personality in, having the culture and that foundation set of wanting to be stand up for yourself but also your peers, and then you have it kind of permeate the locker room where everyone's like in lockstep. We'll wind down on Monday next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Well, it's almost done. You blink and it's finished. Jay Moore, TJ Henning, Chris Schmidt.
So I have to
Hail Varsity Radio
interrupt here.
And what?
Just because with McConaughey's scene there, I don't know if he did a deal with Faraday on
really
on the Golf Channel.
See, I've been because of you, I've watched from time to time back when I had HD cable. When, you know, Faraday would mm-hmm. run his interviews yeah. about 9 or 10 on yeah. Monday nights.
He had McConaughey and he explained how he got that role. As I think it was Watterson. So he goes, he was in a bar somewhere in Texas.
Shocking.
And he was playing golf because Connor loves to play golf, and got to talking with this guy and explain how he was hitting all these shots and he's very animated. And the guy's like, "Have you ever done any acting?" And McConaughey at the time actually was going to go to law school, instead went to film school. He's like, "You know, I've only been in like one Miller Lite commercial." He goes, "Hey, we are casting for this movie that takes place back in the 70s. I think you're perfect for this guy who's just a couple years out of high school, but loves
trolling high school chicks.
But it's a few years out of high school, but likes to hang out with the, you know, the high school kids and high school girls." And he's like, "Sweet." And so he gets the role, and like he, you know, McConaughey and Faraday says, "I was just in the right bar at the right time." And then his first scene that he ever does in the movie is when he like pulls up at the burger place and just, you know, ditch those couple nerds and come hang out with us, you know, tonight, you know. And he said that wasn't even like, that was pretty much improv'd. Like he just kind of went with it.
Pretty much like when he was 18 pulling up at a burger joint in Texas.
Correct.
To the good looking woman.
Correct. So yeah, it was pretty good. It was a lot of good info. So I don't think you have DVR now, but
no,
because of your new arrangements. But
I need to check that out.
Yeah, it's good.
I'll watch it online. I saw a thing too with McConaughey talking about how he got the three all right, all right, all right down. And this was, he was listening to the Doors in the Doors live album. I'm a huge Doors guy. Mm-hmm. And at the end of one of the songs, it might have been Light My Fire, Morrison goes, "All right, all right, all right." It might be Roadhouse Blues, the song. But that kind of inspired him to ad-lib that part of it, and he thought of his dad. And one was, his dad's passed, but his dad's drinking a can of Miller Lite. His dad's doing gumbo. Mm-hmm. And this guy's probably doing all right, so 3 out of 4. So that's how he got, all right, I don't have the girl yet. But we're working on it. All right, all right, all right. That's on YouTube. But your Faraday, man, you got me cranked up to go watch that now.
Yeah, it was good. It just, I mean, obviously they talk a little golf, but it's not
it's
a lot.
Just dudes,
it's just chopping it up
chat.
And talking about how he's just a different cat, though. Like, he's a different breed.
See,
like,
I always thought he was kind of, and this goes back to, like, the naked bongo drum incident.
Yeah.
Probably 15, 16 years ago, where him and Woody are over at Uncle Willie's.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Peyote.
Yeah. That. that, but... And then he was doing just crap movies I'd have to watch with my wife, yeah, like chick flicks.
Like rom-coms. You talked about that. He goes, I was always cast for rom-coms.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, I had to get out of it.
No, and... No. When you're back, we'll talk more McConaughey. We got to get Pirate on because Pirate went to McConaughey's wedding.
Oh, nice.
So we'll work.
He brought him the sword, didn't he?
Yes. Tomorrow at 4. See ya.